This is a special edition of the Sound Off, episode 86, here on SCScoops.com. It is Saturday, October 17, 2009. I'm going to talk about the pretty surprising Shane McMahon announcement yesterday, announcing his resignation from WWE, and talk about a few other things. Just a quick note to those of you who do listen to the podcast every week, Sound Off 84 went up on Sunday. Actually, I should say this past weekend, as usual, and there was yet another edition of the Sound Off posted on Thursday. That was episode 85, so if you haven't had a chance yet to check out either one of those, check out the main page or the audio section here at SC Scoops. You can get it, of course, also on iTunes. You can subscribe to the show, and it will be delivered to you directly. And, of course, you can follow me in any breaking news like this will usually go up on SC Scoops right away, but it'll also go up on my Twitter page, twitter.com/Solomonster. So check that out as well. The Shane McMahon announcement was made on Friday morning. People first started hearing about it in WWE very late Thursday night, but it basically came as a shock to everybody on Friday. That goes for people both in the company who work for Vince and Shane McMahon and people outside the company. Nobody really expected this. The announcement was made on the WWE corporate website, and the main page at WWE.com a little bit later on had a note on Shane's departure as well. And just to read you in quick part of Shane's announcement, it starts, "It is with great sadness that I announce my resignation from the WWE. Effective January 1, 2010, I have never even considered a future outside the walls of the WWE. However, sometimes life takes an unexpected turn, and while it is the most difficult decision I have ever made, it is time for me to move on." Of course, he thanked his father, Vince McMahon, the wrestlers that he has worked with over the years, and the fans. Vince McMahon had a comment in the press release that was posted on the corporate website that read in part, "Even though I am personally saddened by Shane's decision to leave the company, I am proud of the enormous contributions he has made. He will unquestionably bring passion, commitment, and extensive business experience to any endeavor that he pursues." His official title was Executive Vice President of Global Media. He was involved with the website and helping to orchestrate certain business deals. I know recently he had been involved in a deal that got WWE additional pay-per-view exposure in Mexico. That was a couple of months back. That has actually been a pretty big boon for the company. So he was involved in things like that. Not so much in the creative aspect. Obviously, that is the creative team itself is headed by his sister, Stephanie. And many people believe her husband, Triple H, has his own influence on that as well. That really was not an area that Shane was involved in. I don't know if that was a voluntary decision or just, you know, one of those deals where that was his sister's territory and he was to kind of keep his hands off. There were no other details released with the announcement or in the announcement itself, even subsequent to the announcement. Lots of speculation yesterday and even so far this weekend, with no concrete news on exactly where Shane goes next. Obviously, he's 39 years old. He's not just going to retire to a beach house and kind of relax on the beach for the rest of his days. He's going to do something, and the question is what and where. He basically gave the company over 60 days notice because he's still with them. He will be there until January 1st. It's a situation where we may not know much more, if anything, in the way of what happens with Shane McMahon until the first of the new year. I find that hard to believe. I'm sure there'll be rumblings at some point soon. Because this whole thing came out of left field, and I just have a feeling that there's more to the story than what we're hearing. Lots of speculation, as I said. Lots of theories out there about what this means. I posted the news on my Twitter page very shortly after the announcement was made, and I made a comment in there that was kind of tongue-in-cheek, but only partially tongue-in-cheek, about how we may have a real-life McMahon-Helmsley regime on our hands hell of a lot quicker than we ever imagined. And I say only partially because it's been known for quite some time now that Stephanie has kind of had the creative reins. She's married to Triple H. And when the day comes that Vince McMahon either dies or steps aside, and being that I don't ever see Vince McMahon stepping aside, the day that Vince McMahon dies, for all intents and purposes, Stephanie and Triple H are going to be the ones to run that company. Hypothetically speaking, if Linda McMahon were to become senator in the state of Connecticut, that would make that even more of a reality, even though I don't think Linda McMahon has a snowball's chance in hell of winning, let alone even getting the nomination for the Republican Party, but that's a different story. A lot of speculation that maybe Shane is stepping aside to help his mom and kind of be a part of the campaign. I don't know that there's any rule or law that would dictate him having to give up his position in WWE in order to do that. Maybe there's some sort of potential conflict of interest. I mean, it made sense for Linda to have to step aside. That may have been a law, but I don't know that Shane would have to quit his job just to help his mother. That's one theory. He's going to help on the campaign, and when that's over, he'll come back. And that may well be true, but here's the thing that strikes me about this announcement. If that were the case, why not make that statement in the announcement or in the press release? Because they had to know that by keeping it so vague, there was going to be a lot of rampant speculation. Now, the announcement was made on a Friday as well. Now, I'm a PR person in the real world, if you will. I work for a public relations company. I'm kind of a PR-minded person. And Friday is not the ideal time to be putting out a press release and making a major announcement. So, obviously, this is not something that they wanted to kind of linger over the course of the week. You make the announcement on Friday, and then, you kind of have the weekend to hope that it dies down. But that's usually in the case of something on a much lower level than this. This is not a story that people are going to forget about come Monday morning. But I thought it was interesting having the announcement made on a Friday morning. And the fact that it came as a shock to so many people, including people that worked under Shane at Titan Tower, again, it gets my mind thinking that maybe this was not a rash decision, but something that was not pre-planned all that much in advance. Perhaps Shane had some sort of blow-up with his father, as he has been known to do. Shane has butted heads with his dad before, but then again, so is Stephanie. Vince could be a very difficult person to work around and to work for. But there have been stories in the past of Shane McMahon pitching ideas on storyline ideas and other ideas as it relates to business. So not necessarily from a creative standpoint, but perhaps kind of branching WWE out into mixed martial arts. Shane was a big proponent for WWE either buying an MMA organization or starting their own. Vince McMahon, of course, wanted to have nothing to do with it, which, knowing Vince's track record with outside ventures that have nothing to do with pro wrestling, was probably the best possible idea, the best possible move that he could make. But I'm sure that didn't make Shane very happy. Shane was also an advocate for making ECW its own separate, distinct, viable brand when they decided to make ECW a brand. Obviously, Vince McMahon saw things differently, and we see the ECW that we have today. How different would that have been if Shane would have gotten his way, or perhaps if Shane had even been put in charge of that? We'll never know. But what I'm saying is that Shane has butted heads with his dad before. And maybe things came to a head. Maybe he pitched another idea and got shot down. Maybe he just saw the writing on the wall and saw that, you know, his little sister was quite clearly in a position to take things over at some point, or is in a position now where maybe she's gaining more power. I don't know. I had not heard of any sort of power shakeup or behind-the-scenes tensions between the McMahon children and WWE. Nobody really has. That's why this thing was quite a surprise when people heard the news. It is obvious, though, that Stephanie and by proxy, Triple H, are kind of the heir to the throne, if you will. And that's a position that many thought Shane McMahon had in his back pocket for many years. When Shane first came up and became a television character, and it was Vince and Shane on TV during the Attitude Era and during the Invasion, Shane McMahon was always looked at as the heir apparent to his father. And Stephanie, you know, back then, Stephanie was helping in WWE and working for her dad, but she didn't have the sort of power that she had now. And I don't believe that she was installed as the head of the creative team until 02 or 03. So it's almost like a complete 180 in that Shane seemed like the odd man out. A lot of people behind the scenes in WWE remark even that, you know, Vince looks at Triple H almost like his own son, and perhaps at the expense of Shane. I'm not saying they all hate each other or there's a lot of family tension and the family is going to be breaking up. Again, this is pure speculation, but these other stories that I'm mentioning are fact. They have happened. And you wonder how, if at all, that plays into the decision for Shane to leave the company. Because let's face it, you know, this is what Shane has done his entire life. You know, Shane grew up around wrestling. He had to work hard. He wasn't handed anything. I mean, certainly I won't cry for the upbringing that Shane McMahon had, but you know, there's no doubt that his father put him to work and in a behind the scenes capacity, and Shane had to kind of earn his keep, so to speak, and was very involved in WWE. Obviously, got involved in storylines. We remember the Mean Street Posse and all the great matches that Shane has had, and Shane was never a trained wrestler, but he would go out there and have match after match, despite the stupid, unnecessary stunts he would do. I could think of at least three or four really good to great Shane McMahon matches from over the years. The match with Test at SummerSlam 99. There was another match that he had, I believe it was with The Rock. I think they had more than one match. It was a cage match on Raw that I remember. I always enjoyed Shane McMahon's shtick. I thought he was entertaining, except when he was overexposed, but you can say that for all the McMahons. Last time we really saw Shane, consistently anyway, was earlier this year. He was part of the feud with Randy Orton and the McMahons, and in fact, Shane and Orton had their own feud. They had a pay-per-view match. Shane got punted in the head. Had a feud with Kane a couple of years ago when Kane was kind of torturing the McMahon family and had tombstoned his mom, Linda McMahon, and all that. So Shane has been an integral part of the company over the years, and that so-called heir apparent title clearly does not apply today. And if it's a situation where Shane kind of saw the writing on the wall and decided that, you know what, I should just get out now. I see the writing on the wall. I see the way things are and how they're going. Maybe, you know, he couldn't deal with his dad anymore. He would pitch ideas and constantly get shot down. Another example, just to give you one, a couple of years ago, WrestleMania 23 was the 20th anniversary of WrestleMania from the Pontiac Silverdome. And Vince McMahon was, of course, there that night in 1987 and introduced the show and introduced Aretha Franklin at the beginning of the show. And they brought Aretha Franklin back in a couple of years ago in Detroit for WrestleMania. And they wanted to do a very similar, if not identical, introduction for the show. Kind of a full WrestleMania come full circle type of deal. And Shane McMahon pitched very, very hard to be the one, in place of his father, who had done it 20 years earlier, to kind of introduce the show and introduce Aretha Franklin at the beginning of the show. And the one person who was adamantly opposed to it was Stephanie. Why, I don't know. But Stephanie McMahon did not want her brother introducing the show. She wanted, I think, her dad to do it. And again, it was one of those power struggles, and you go back and watch the show, and again, Shane clearly did not win out. And instead, they actually used a recording of Vince's voice from 1987 at WrestleMania to introduce the show and introduce Aretha Franklin. So again, it's just one of those examples that I just thought of now that illustrates how, despite how powerful Shane may have been in his position in the company behind the scenes, he was quite less powerful than his sibling. And, you know, did that play a role? Perhaps. Shane is also notoriously a huge, huge fan of MMA. And UFC, which is ironically direct competition for World Wrestling Entertainment these days. They may not ever admit that publicly, but they're fooling themselves because UFC is their direct competition, and they know it. Privately, anyway, they all know it. They monitor UFC. UFC's audience and their audience clearly overlaps. UFC has stolen a lot of the old pro wrestling fans away from WWE. They've stolen pay-per-view buys away from WWE, and there's no doubt in my mind that many future pro wrestling stars in the making have been stolen away by mixed martial arts in the last couple of years, and it's only going to get worse over the next 5 years. Lots and lots and lots of guys, young guys coming out of college who would have typically in the past gone into pro wrestling, maybe they would go to WWE developmental, are bypassing pro wrestling for the cooler and greener pastures of mixed martial arts, and specifically UFC. And I can't tell you how many people in WWE, and I've heard these stories enough from several reputable news sources that, you know, you hear it enough and it must be true, there are tons of people who work in the company right now, both talent and also people in other capacities, backstage executive capacities, who have remarked that if given the opportunity to do so, they would work for UFC over WWE in a heartbeat. And on the one hand, that's easy to say now because UFC is doing so well. And in a way, UFC is almost in a boom period, the likes of which WWE had 10 years ago, only far, far bigger, making much, much more money. So, of course, when things are going well, people are going to want to go where the grass is greener. But there's a lot of people who feel that way. And Shane has been a big fan for a long time. Like I said earlier, he really wanted WWE to get involved in some way in the MMA arena. And Vince just would have none of it. He may have briefly considered it, but at the end of the day, he put the kibosh on it, and it just wasn't going to happen. Which, again, I think was for the better, because as we've seen before, when Vince's attention is diverted to other projects, the wrestling product suffers, and that project ultimately fails miserably. Case in point, the XFL. Case in point, the WBF. Case in point, WWF New York in Times Square. Case in point, the WWF Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas that never even opened. They bought the old Debbie Reynolds Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. It was up for sale. They purchased this. This would have been back in 99. They even had shirts, sweaters, and other items made that had WWF Hotel and Casino on it. I know because I used to have a shirt like that. And somewhere along the way, they realized this is just not going to work. Now, to their credit, they were able to sell off the hotel for a profit. So they actually made about $1 million in profit off of it. Which, again, like I said, is a credit to them, but it's another example of them trying to branch out and get involved in things that have nothing to do with pro wrestling and ultimately falling flat on their face and failing miserably. So they didn't get involved in MMA, but Shane has a deep, deep interest in it. And there's equally a lot of speculation, just as much as there's speculation that Shane may go help out his mom on the campaign trail, which I'm not saying he will not help Linda, but I really don't think that that has anything to do with him resigning from the company. Because if that were the case, they would not leave themselves open to this type of speculation like this. Not just on the internet, but this is a publicly traded company with stockholders. They're probably equally apprehensive right now because this guy just basically quit his job and was very vague about the reasons why and where he's going. And again, if he was going to help his mom on the campaign trail, why not say that up front? So I don't think that's the answer. As I was saying, people equally speculating that perhaps Shane is leaving to get involved in some way with MMA. Perhaps he's going to go work for UFC. Perhaps he's interested in buying out another MMA organization, like the Strikeforce organization, which now has a contract with CBS. They have a CBS special coming up on November 7th, in fact. They have the so-called pound-for-pound best fighter in the world in Fedor Emelianenko under contract. What a coup it would be for Shane McMahon to come in, even as a part owner of the Strikeforce promotion, or perhaps some other promotion. Maybe he's going to start his own business that has MMA ties, start his own MMA promotion. Again, all speculation, but it's certainly something that I could see Shane doing, something he has a passion for. And him working for UFC, I find a lot less realistic and a lot less desirable. Because strictly for the fact that if Shane McMahon were to go work for UFC and the Fertitta brothers, that would really set off a real-life war between father and son. Like I said, UFC is looked at as direct competition to WWE. TNA is not competition to WWE at all. WWE does not look at TNA as competition, nor should they, because TNA is not competition to WWE. UFC has proven that they are a monster in terms of television ratings, less so, but still, they draw very good television ratings, pay-per-view buy rates, tickets, and they're increasing their global recognition by the week. TNA has none of that. They're a wrestling promotion. I use that term wrestling very loosely, given that Vince Russo writes. They seem to be perfectly content drawing their 1.0 rating every week and not growing. TNA just kind of stays stagnant year after year. The only thing that probably annoys WWE, obviously they don't like it when people go to TNA. Certain people have gone there and they've burned bridges with Vince McMahon. And it's probably annoying if they want to sign somebody but they can't because TNA snatches them up and they're under contract. But other than that, TNA is just, they're more annoying to WWE than anything else. They're not real competition for WWE. And I'm not saying that as a TNA basher, because I'm not. But they're just not competition. And that's their choice. They choose not to get bigger. They choose not to improve by doing things like firing Jim Cornette and retaining the services of Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara. That's their prerogative. But the real competition here is UFC. And for Shane McMahon to go to UFC, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I don't see that as being the likely end result of this. But, boy, if that were to happen, you talk about bad blood between Vince and Shane. I don't see how there could be anything but that there. And perhaps if Shane had some sort of blow-up with his father, maybe he wouldn't think twice about doing it just out of spite. And, you know, just to prove that it's something that he can do, and he can do successfully. We just don't know right now exactly what the future is for Shane McMahon. We do know there's a lot of very shocked people who are also a little scared in WWE right now because, again, they don't know why Shane left. You know, Shane was very friendly with a lot of the boys, a lot of the wrestlers. And for the son of Vince McMahon to up and leave is quite eye-opening. You know, maybe there's nothing to it. Just based on the vagueness and the timing of the announcement and the fact that nobody seems to know what the hell is going on, I think there's a much bigger story here that I'm sure it's going to come out in the days and weeks to come. But Shane is going to be with them through January 1st. We may not know much until then, but that's kind of where the story is right now. Not a whole lot beyond that to speculate on, but those are the prevailing theories about where Shane may end up and what he may end up doing. You know, maybe Shane is just as frustrated as you and I are about the creative aspect of the WWE product. Maybe he sees that, you know, they're not growing. They're not making new stars. They're not putting on, you know, truly entertaining and gripping television shows the way they used to, and he just wants out. You know, maybe that has something to do with it. I give credit for this to Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer. I heard him talking about this recently. In fact, it was probably after the Shane McMahon news broke, and it's a very valid point, and I want to give him credit for it because I agree with him 100%, and I think it's worth mentioning. And this may be a little off topic here, but it goes to the point of not making new stars and WWE kind of having their heads up their asses. You know, there was a directive that went out to Steve Kern, who will forever be known as Skinner the Alligator Man by me. The early 90s WWF fan that I am. But Steve Kern, of course, runs Florida Championship Wrestling, which is their one and only, believe it or not, developmental promotion, which has a budget of basically nothing. WWE budgets practically no money. Out of their millions and millions of dollars, they budget absolutely nothing to their developmental promotion, which tells you all you need to know about the future of this business. But a directive went out not so long ago that basically said they should be looking for guys that are at least 6'2", 240 pounds. Basically, any small guy, don't really give him a second look. We're not interested. Now, they've sent out directives like this in the past, and they've rescinded them. But apparently, this is what they're looking for now. They're looking for guys that are big, that are muscular. They may not be the best wrestler in the world. They may not be the best talker in the world. But if they look the part, they'll make it work. You know, like they did so successfully with people like Vladimir Kozlov. This I find just infuriating as a fan. And I will say this, that if this has anything to do with Shane's decision to leave, and I'm sure this is not the only thing, but, you know, for all I know, Shane McMahon is just as frustrated as we are. I'm not saying that's the reason he quit. But Shane seems like a smart enough guy. And a lot... very savvy like his mom. A lot of people say that Vince and Stephanie are very much alike the way that Shane and Linda are very much alike. Shane is a smart enough guy, I think, to understand that there's something a little out of whack here. Because why in 2009 are we still looking for guys that are all jacked up and big when if you look up and down the WWE roster, look up and down the Raw roster, look up and down the SmackDown roster, look up and down the ECW roster... a large majority of the guys that are on there that are your go-to guys, your entertaining guys, your money makers, your big stars, are not guys that are 6'2", 240. Rey Mysterio is pretty far from 6'2", 240. I mean, you could put him in a stretcher machine, he still won't be 6'2", 240. Chris Jericho is not 6'2", 240. The Miz is not 6'2", 240. Quite frankly, I don't even know that John Morrison is 6'2", 240. I'd be shocked if he was. Shawn Michaels? Not quite. But Guys like Triple H. Yeah, they're 6'2", 240. Guys like the great Khali, Mark Henry, Vladimir Kozlov, Ezekiel Jackson. Sure, they fit the bill. But just think about it like this, and this is a point that Meltzer made, and I think it's worth mentioning here. If a young Shawn Michaels or a young Ric Flair were coming up in the business today and they were sent to, or they sent a tape in or they went down to Florida to talk to Steve Kern so they can get into Florida Championship Wrestling and get their big break in the business, okay? A young heartbreak kid, a young nature boy comes. They're not going to be given a second look in 2009 because they're not 6 foot 2 inches tall, 240 pounds. So if Ric Flair or Shawn Michaels were coming up today in the business, they'd be doing something completely different from pro wrestling because that's not what Vince McMahon is looking for. And when you have guys that are athletic, that have an athletic background in football and wrestling, you know, a guy like Jack Swagger certainly fits that bill. He's a big guy. But he's another example of somebody who, you know, if he were coming up a couple of years from now, let's say Jack Swagger was coming up 3 years from now, I don't know that Jack Swagger would be in WWE. I don't know that Jack Swagger would want to have anything to do with WWE. I think Jack Swagger would be training in MMA. I think Shelton Benjamin would be training in MMA. Kurt Angle, we know he would be training in MMA. Brock Lesnar, people like that, those were big stars in wrestling. These are guys that you're going to start seeing less and less of in the years to come. You'll start seeing more people like Chris Masters and Drew McIntyre. Not knocking Drew McIntyre, but again, the fact that in 2009, this is what they're looking for. Shawn Michaels would never get a second look. Ric Flair would have the door slammed in his face. I think there's something just egregiously wrong with this picture. And there's a lot of problems in WWE right now. Take your pick. Which one of those problems may have affected Shane McMahon's decision? We don't know yet. But it wouldn't surprise me if one of them did play into that line of thinking. Hopefully we'll find out soon. And, of course, when we do find out, you'll hear about it first here on SEScoops.com, and I'll be sure to talk about it in the sound-off. Now, TNA has a pay-per-view coming up tomorrow night, Bound for Glory. This is their so-called WrestleMania of the year, which I find incredibly hard to believe because I almost forgot that there was a Bound for Glory pay-per-view. Now, I don't fancy myself the biggest TNA fan in the world, but practically no advertising for it. No, it doesn't really have a big feel. I mean, in fairness, nobody puts on a big show like WWE does, and TNA doesn't have quite the resources available to them that WWE has. But they could have done a much better job of making this show feel special. But I must preface this by saying that I did see the Kurt Angle AJ Styles match from Impact on Thursday. I thought it was phenomenal, no pun intended. Just a great, great match. I wish we would see more matches like that on TV, on free TV every week from both promotions, quite frankly. It appeared to me, just based on the how it ended, that maybe they're setting up a Kurt Angle AJ Styles program. And those of you who saw the news items on the various wrestling websites, which basically potentially spoiled the main event of Bound for Glory, I'm not going to mention it here, but it just the ending of Impact appeared to me as though maybe they're setting up for a Kurt Angle AJ Styles feud after the pay-per-view. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Bound for Glory, let's just do a quick rundown here. AJ Styles and Sting for the TNA World title. Just for the record, and those of you who think Sting is retiring, he is not. Sting is sticking around, so this is not a win or retire situation, so that will not be playing into the result of this match at all. Kurt Angle will take on Matt Morgan. This is going to be a little dicey. Morgan posted on his Twitter page earlier today that he's been suffering from back spasms in three different places, and that's rough. Having back spasms in one place is bad enough, but in three... Morgan, I doubt, is going to back out of this match, but if he's not quite as mobile or things don't look quite right with him, that may be why. Samoa Joe against Bobby Lashley in a submission match. We have Mick Foley and Abyss in a Monsters Ball match with Dr. Stevie as the referee. Ultimate X, X Division Champion Amazing Red, battles Suicide, battles D'Angelo De Niro, who battles Daniels, who battles Homicide. So what is that, six guys, right? That's basically a... six-pack challenge, five-pack challenge, whatever you want to call it. TNA Knockouts champion ODB against Awesome Kong and Tara. Full Metal Mayhem, TNA World Tag Team Champions Booker T and Scott Steiner against Team 3D versus Beer Money versus the British Invasion. No secret here that Steiner and Booker are likely not leaving the pay-per-view with the titles. Despite Booker's recent problems with TNA, and he will likely be gone from TNA, possibly even after this Sunday show, they were scheduled to lose the titles anyway. It's just a matter of who will get them. TNA Legends Champion Kevin Nash against Hernandez against Eric Young. What is with all these multiple man matches? This is a classic Vince Russo card here. TNA Knockouts Tag Team Champions Taylor Wilde and Sarita against the Beautiful People. And the Motor City Machine Guns will battle Lethal Consequences. I believe that will air on the pay-per-view pre-show, and that may be one of the best matches of the night. So there you go. That's your TNA Bound for Glory rundown. I'm really not in a position to give my my predictions, since this is more of a news update anyway. But I haven't watched enough of Impact over the last several weeks to really judge. I have my sense of who will win certain matches, but there you go. The WrestleMania of TNA is this Sunday, and if you order the pay-per-view, just be aware that I believe the price tag on this event is higher than usual. I think each year they raise the price for Bound for Glory because it is their big show. So instead of the usual $30 or $35, whatever it is, I believe they're charging $40 for this one. So there you go. All right. So being that this is my third sound off in 1 week, by far the most number of podcasts I've done in a week, I'm still getting feedback. Let's try to eliminate some more of these letters here. Yet another bonus edition of the mailbag this week. Should make you all very happy. Why don't we just start with an email that literally just came in half an hour ago, I guess. From Alejandro. Alex in Tijuana, Mexico, wants to know, on the last pay-per-view match between John Cena and Randy Orton, that would be the Hell in a Cell bout in Newark, something made from metal like a razor blade fell off of Cena during the match. It was on the mat, and the referee at one point picked it up and put it in his pocket. Nobody said anything. Could you shed some light on this? I don't remember that particular part of the match, but I have heard other people make mention of this, so I looked into it. It wouldn't have made any sense if it were a blade, because obviously there is a no-blade rule in WWE right now, and if you watch the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, I'm sure one of the things that jumped right out at you was the lack of blood in any of the matches. It is, in fact, not a razor blade, but a piece of confetti that had fallen earlier in the night. When it would have fallen, I don't know. Maybe it was just on the floor, and Cena was on the floor at one point, and it kind of stuck to his back. So it was a piece of confetti, based on everything I'm being told, and not a razor blade. And it just, I guess it fell off Cena, and the referee kind of just put it in his pocket or brushed it away, whatever the case may be. But it was not, in fact, a razor blade. Let's see here. With WWE's PG direction, why do they continue to bring in women who have done nude or semi-nude pictorials, and in some cases, like Mickie James, full-on X-rated ones with actual penetration? Would this not hurt Linda McMahon's centipede? Now, I answered a question on my last podcast about this. I mentioned the fact that there are, in fact, nude photos of Mickie James that were taken long before her WWE career, maybe even long before her entire wrestling career started, because she used to be in TNA as well. I don't remember any of those photos including actual penetration. So, strictly for research and verification purposes, if anybody has possession of this particular photo or set of photos, feel free to send them to me. And I will be sure to answer that question and confirm whether or not there was, in fact, penetration in this pictorial. Does it hurt Linda McMahon's Senate bid? I don't think so. I think Linda is more, I think Linda is more susceptible to attacks from her opponents who, and they actually just did this week. They actually have assembled videos that I think WWE has since had taken down on YouTube that contain several different clips from past WWE angles, including the Katie Vick angle, as an example of the wonderful product that Linda and her family put out there. She's far more susceptible to being beaten down because of things like Katie Vick and Trish Stratus on all fours barking like a dog, than hiring women who have done pictorials in the past. You know, in many respects, what they've done in the past is kind of their business. Yeah, WWE doesn't have to hire them if they don't want to, but I don't see that hurting her campaign at all. Solomonster, do you think Brian Pillman will be inserted into the WWE Hall of Fame next year to get Steve Austin to come back and induct him a la The Rock last year? I don't see Pillman going into the Hall of Fame this year. I won't say that he will never go into the Hall of Fame, but I have not heard anything about him going into the Hall. And, you know, they had Austin last year. I mean, this was Austin's final WrestleMania. I'm sure they could get Austin to come back to do an induction if they wanted him to, and Pillman would probably be the guy for it. But why not wait at least another year or two? I mean, they just recently had Austin. I don't see there being such a need to get him back, you know, in a couple of months to make another appearance, unless he wants to voluntarily. But Pillman's not on that short list of people I see going in next year. I've heard a lot of rumors about the Ultimate Warrior. I still, you know, never say never with WWE. Just because, and even if they extend the invitation and the olive branch for the Warrior, it doesn't mean that he would accept. But the idea here is that they're running out of big names to put in the Hall of Fame. They still don't want to put Randy Savage in there. And, you know, Phoenix is the Warrior's hometown, so I won't say that it's impossible to conceive of the notion that Ultimate Warrior could go into the Hall of Fame. I just don't see it happening. It could. It may well happen. And there's also a lot of rumors about the Honky Tonk Man, who, of course, is the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. If you don't believe me, just ask him. He also lives in Arizona, and so in one respect, it would kind of make sense for him to go in. He inducted Coco Beware last year, and certainly Honky won a title, at least, in WWE, and held on to it for 15 months. That's more than Coco Beware could say. So, as far as Brian Pillman, I have not heard anything, and I just don't see him going in 2010. All right, we got a letter here from Adam. Dear Solomon, sir, I was wondering what your list of top wrestling disappointments would be. Things that just did not pan out like they should have. Well, first of all, I could do an entire show on this. There's no way I could limit this to a list here and now. Maybe if enough people write in and they're interested in hearing about it, I could do a whole podcast on that. Second question he has, though, that I can answer. When Chris Jericho returned to WWE, he had the Save Us gimmick. Do you think that since coming back, he's been able to bring some meaning back to wrestling? Since returning, he has attempted to make the tag team championships mean something again, as well as having longer-lasting, more meaningful feuds. What are your thoughts? Well, there's no doubt in my mind that Jericho is in the best phase of his career right now, which is saying a lot, because he was very, very hot when he first came into WWF, held a lot of championships, was involved in a lot of feuds for many, many years. But he was never really looked at as a truly top guy. People always felt like there was something missing. Maybe he was too smarmy, and, you know, maybe he just worked better as a heel. People didn't take him very seriously. When he came back to WWE, he came back, it was a big deal. He had a match with Randy Orton, I believe it was, for the championship and didn't win. And then he segued into a feud with JBL that went nowhere. And he was kind of floundering. And it wasn't until Jericho turned heel and got the new haircut and the new look and came out, and he started to cut a different kind of promos, a Jake the Snake-type promo, and that's really when he just began to take off, and he became the hottest thing in wrestling. And a lot of people would say he still is one of the hottest things in wrestling, if not the hottest act, in all of WWE. I mean, there's no doubt that when Edge was around before he went down with an injury, it was him and Jericho. They were the two top guys in that company. And Jericho has definitely helped restore some value to those tag team belts with Big Show. There's no doubt about that. They've achieved that goal. The problem still, and this is not a problem that was going to change, that's all fine and good, but when they lose the belts are going to go right back to meaning nothing, because I don't see the next team that holds them holding them for as long as Jericho and Big Show did. So when they ultimately lose the belts, you know, they'll probably end up switching hands about as much as the world title switches hands, which is not a good thing. And the other problem is they have no tag teams. I mean, Jericho and Big Show were two singles guys put together as a team, so they're not a real tag team in the traditional sense anyway. But other than Crime Time and the Hart Dynasty, you really don't have anybody as a legitimate tag team. There's nobody. And that's not going to change. That's going to be a long-term thing they're going to have to work on. And even in developmental right now, I don't think there's any real tag teams down there. But Jericho has definitely helped. You know, he was also a world champion two or three times, had that feud with Shawn Michaels. He had a great feud with Rey Mysterio. He just has a string of great matches with people. And you mentioned, you know, is it because that Jericho has kind of conceived of this? The answer is yes. Jericho has a great deal of influence into his storylines and the promos that get written for him. He's a veteran. But it just goes to show you that when you actually welcome input and feedback from the talent and not everything is scripted out by the writers, you know, Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho, for example, they basically put their whole feud together. They had a series of matches that went over a couple of months. It was the best thing in WWE. Why? Because the writers didn't get their grubby paws all over it. Jericho and Michaels had a tremendous amount of input, and they put that whole damn thing together. So Jericho is awesome. There's no doubt about that. His contract is coming up next year. I hope that he re-signs. I think he will. I really do. I think since coming back, he was burned out in 05 when he left. Those 2 years off really, I think, helped invigorate him. I think he has a passion again for the business. So I think he'll re-sign. I'm not too worried about that. But there's no doubt that if Jericho left again, it would just be a huge void in WWE if he left. All right, got a letter here from Jason in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Dear Solomonster, I've been listening to the podcast since the time you predicted Jake Roberts would be dead within 5 years. I guess that's probably about 4 years now. My question is, what is a what-if question, I should say. If the Sound Off existed in the late 80s, early 90s, what would be some of the biggest stories slash situations that you would cover? Perhaps the Randy Savage snakebite, Hulk Hogan's title runs and lack of pushes for other talent, Ultimate Warrior and WWE's beef with each other over the years, etc., etc. Perhaps this could be a new weekly feature, Solomonster's Throwback of the Week. Take care and hope you are doing better. Well, I am doing better, so thank you. I'm feeling a lot better. It's an interesting concept, actually. I mean, I grew up a fan of the late 80s, early 90s WWF. Have been a fan ever since then. I look back fondly on a lot of those angles. I don't know that I have enough in the way of insight or insight into all of those kind of big stories and angles to do a segment every week. But there's certainly things I know about some of those angles that I would love to share. And Lord knows I'd love to talk about it. So, again, I throw it out to you guys, my sound-off listeners. If that's the sort of thing you'd be interested in, having some sort of a throwback segment every week and you want to write in and pick an angle or a superstar or a storyline and have me talk about a specific match or event from that time period, late 80s, early 90s, mid-90s, whatever, write in and let me know. And maybe we'll make it a regular feature on the podcast. And also, if you have a better name for it. You know, Solomonster's Throwback could work, but I know you guys are creative. So pretend it's one of these WWE surveys that they send out with those really crappy pay-per-view titles. Only try to come up with a better title for the segment, and then we'll see if we can make something happen. And whatever you do, do not throw in Multimania or Heavy Metal, because those are just simply not options, and I will ban you from listening to future podcasts if you do that. All right, so why don't we end things here on a lighter note? We'll end with a joke that somebody sent in. Dear Solomonster, with the staleness of the WWE product and the fact that you are not feeling well of late, I figured you could do well with a laugh. I found this joke online, which I thought was pretty funny. And the joke goes a little something like this. Vince McMahon, Bill Gates, and Donald Trump die in an airplane crash. The three billionaires then stand before God. God looks at Bill Gates and says, "Before I let you into my kingdom, tell me what you truly believed on Earth." Bill steps forward, says, "I believe that with the right amount of technology, we as people can reach the farthest imaginings possible. I think that the universe is an obstacle we can overcome." God nods, the gates of heaven open. "You may enter, Mr. Gates." He then looks to Trump. "And you, what were your beliefs?" The Donald says, "Well, God, I believe that no person in the world should be without. I think the reason people are in poverty is because they are too lazy to get out of it. Anyone can be a billionaire. Anyone can make a fortune with the right amount of willpower." God nods, "Mr. Trump, you may enter." God then looks to Vince. "And what do you believe?" Vince swaggers over to the throne of God, puts his foot up on the steps of his throne. He looks God square in the eyes and says, "I believe you are in my seat." Probably reads better than I just said it, but I thought it was funny. It gave me a chuckle because I totally see that happening when Vince dies. And first of all, I don't even think that Vince is going to the pearly gates. I think Vince is going a little down south, if you know what I mean. Anyway, that's going to do it for this special, unexpected edition of the Sound Off, episode 86 here with some breaking news on the Shane McMahon situation. TNA Bound for Glory rundown and another mailbag. If you have any questions for the mailbag, do write in to thesolomonster@gmail.com. Try to do a mailbag segment with the podcast every weekend here on scscoops.com. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/solomonster. And as always, you can download these shows for free at the iTunes Music Store. You can even go on iTunes and subscribe to the show. So whenever there's a new podcast uploaded, it is delivered to your iTunes client automatically. And no reason for you not to be part of the Sound Off each week. Now, being that I've done three of these shows in a week, I'm not sure if there will be a podcast next weekend. There probably will be, but if not, you have plenty of content here to keep you filled for, God, this is probably 3 hours worth or close to 3 hours worth of podcasts here. So if you didn't check out episode 84 or 85, which went up on Thursday, go back and check that out. There's a lot of good stuff in there. And that's going to do it for this update. So until next time, be well, stay safe, and we will see you next week.
You've been listening to The Sound Monster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing. Anybody agree with me out there? I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here. Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business. On SEScoops.com.